sex matters, period.
What?
Really?
What?
I'm Judy.
I'm Patricia.
And this is the Sex Matters Podcast. We are going to pull topics out of our hats, grab items from the news, and take questions submitted by you, the listener. So we invite you to join us. Why? Because sex matters. Period. Hey, this is Judy. If this is your first episode, I just want to orient you. We're going to hop into the fourth part of a series, and you are certainly welcome to stay here. There's a lot of great information ahead, but if you want to catch up in order, totally your choice. The first part of this four-part series started back in episode 17 and 18, a while back before the holidays, knowing where you are in a relationship. The second part is knowing when it's time to call it quits and leaning into intuition and trusting yourself. That's episode 19. Part three is knowing how to do that in an adult manner. Communicate what you need to express in episode 27 last week. And now you are here. Welcome to part four. So you've gone through the first three bits and pieces. Now, what do you do afterwards? What do you do next? Here you go.
Part Here we four. Are, part four. Wow, I can't believe it.
We made it to part four.
We have.
And,
you know, this was about what do you do next? What do you do after you, once you've gone through these other three steps where you've evaluated where things are, you're trusting your intuition and allowing yourself to make a decision, whatever that is, and leaning into it. And then having the tools to communicate effectively to a partner, loved one, whatever. And then what do you do after that? So what do you do after you have a heavy conversation with a partner?
Right.
Now I'm asking
you. Oh, yeah.
Hot seat.
It depends, but I think if we're in the same space, I like to really be connected. Like I like to have time to sort of be and chill and connect.
With the person.
With that person. Yeah. Whether it's, you know, especially even if it's not great, but you've walked through some stuff, right?
Yeah.
I think that I still, like, I'm thinking about this going, what do I want and what actually happens? And I don't know.
Good observation.
But I think I want to be connected. Although there are times when I think I want the connection, even though I might want space to sort of get through. But I think I want to hang out after the tough stuff and try to regroup a little bit and reconnect in a positive way after the tough stuff is over.
Is it your way of trying to assess? Are you trying to assess how information was interpreted? Or is it truly that you just want to show that you can get beyond it? You personally are beyond it. Do you have any thoughts on that?
I think it depends on the conversation. I think there are times when it's wanting to be beyond it, but I think it's less, maybe it's less, sometimes I think it's maybe a little more selfish in about wanting to create normalcy again, that we have gotten past it.
That what was said was said,
right.
And it's over, it's done. So let's just get back to being normal.
Right.
Although
don't
normal know. May have been what sparked the conversation.
Oh. right. Oh, no, that's true. And I think, you know, again, because I don't come back from hard conversations easily. Like, this is not a skill set that I'm really great at. But, and it depends on the person. It really depends on the person's trust level. But I think a consistency beyond all of that is wanting to try to reestablish a connection on some level. Want to reestablish a normalcy that may not be the normalcy we started with, but a normalcy that we're back on the same plane and we're okay, and we can go forward with life in whatever way that looks like.
and I, that's not always appropriate, right? Like some of these conversations you really do need to break. You need, you need to walk away. You need to process. You both need to process. So it really depends, I think, on the topic and the person.
Mm. Yeah. I could say that, like, for me, the heavier conversations that we've had, the first round, sometimes there's multiple rounds. That's really what happens with me anyway. I'm a verbal processor and I know that about myself. So when I'm the one talked to, when I'm not the initiator of the conversation, oftentimes it will catch me off guard and I need time to process emotion or process thoughts and really kind of digest what was said. Because my immediate stress reaction is to dip into level one or level two, where I feel like I'm being picked on, and then I feel like I have to fight my way back. That's just what I know about myself.
I resonate with that if somebody's coming to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, if I'm on the other side, I usually come to, and I'm having the conversation, it's more along the lines of, I try to deliver it from that level five place, that opportunity. And like, I'm taking a risk here. I'm putting my heart out because I really think this is something we need to talk about. So, I really try to come at it from a place of, there's a better way to do this, you know, and my way may not be the right way. It can be very ego driven. If my intention isn't pure, if I'm really just kind of looking out for myself. So I do try to look at that. I try and really pay attention to whether I'm the deliverer or the receiver as far as what my reaction will be. So if I go back to, I'm the receiver of a conversation and I dip down into my level one, level two, and then I come back and it's on to round two. And that's when I state my case. You know, my husband is an ex-lawyer. So we kind of have debates. We go back and forth. It's like prosecution and defense, you know? So round two will be about me stating my case, where I was coming from, what I was thinking, what my intentions were. And then usually there's a period that I would call round three. And round three is a place of separation where we just kind of take a step away from each other for a little while. And then round four is usually us coming back together. And both of us are usually apologetic for upsetting each other in any kind of way. And we acknowledge each other's feelings and we try to put ourselves in each other's shoes. We know that our intentions are pure, that we love each other and that our love is special and that we fight for our love. That's kind of a rule for us, is that we'll always fight for our love.
That's an interesting statement.
Yeah. If you don't fight for it, nobody else is gonna. When you have something and you know that it's special, you want to keep it. You want to preserve it, right?
Right.
And who else is gonna fight for it if you and your partner don't?
Yeah. It's getting back in that space of we know.
Intention.
Right. We know we've got this really cool thing.
Yeah.
We've got a lot of good stuff going for us.
Not to say we don't have challenges.
I mean,
because challenges happen. That's life. Life happens and change happens. And even though, you know, my husband and I, we've only been together for 3 years, but our dynamics have changed considerably from the beginning of our relationship to today. You know, we've had a lot of shifts that have happened and we've grown through them and come to love each other even more for what those shifts are. But that doesn't mean that there weren't spells that were challenging or that didn't make sense or that were an affront to me or to him or challenged my belief systems to a core. You know, like I had to come to grips with some of those things. So it's often during that round three where we step away from each other and I contemplate. The contemplation. And then that's when I'm kind of doing a mental inventory and I'm saying, this is the goods and the bads, the pros versus the cons, the pains and the gains, you know, mm-hmm. is this really worth fighting about? Is this a fundamentally moral wrongdoing? Have I been hurt in such a way that I can't come back from? Mm-hmm. And those are all questions I have to ask myself, because for everybody, they'll be different.
Right.
Everybody's moral compass is different. Everybody's grit is different. You know, I'm from Jersey. I fight all the time. You know, we fight for things. I mean, we got some sass to us. It's, you know, you come at me with something and my jersey's going to come up. It's like the hair on the back of my neck stands up and I get my accent back, you know. And he knows when he makes me mad and my jersey comes out, he's just like, whoa, 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 whoa. Okay. Okay. Let's back this up. You're in Minnesota. Calm down.
Oh, God.
Put
that's
you in the
hilarious.
Snow and cool you off. So, I mean, but there's some real decision-making that has to happen. Mm-hmm. You know, you really have to understand, this is a current state. Is this state going to be what the future looks like? What is the pain or cost to remain the way things are right now? And what cost will have to be paid in order to make the changes that are necessary? Mm-hmm. And then it's how does it benefit me to keep things the way they are? And how will it benefit me to make the change? Mm-hmm. I mean, they're really, it's decision-making. It's so that you can make a choice. Mm-hmm. And it's, what do you see out of that? What's standing out for you? And what do I want to do now? And all of that lands in my court. I make the choice mm-hmm. after a conversation to either change something or remain the same. Mm-hmm. And then I own my happiness out of that decision.
And those conversations for you, like mm-hmm. those four stages.
Yeah.
I imagine, and you can tell me if I'm right or not. I imagine that sometimes those are 2-hour four stages and sometimes those are multiple day stages.
Oh, yes. Yes, absolutely. Because usually there's a day or two of me being in that level one, level two energy where I'm just like, you know, so when we have big conversations, it's generally about a week. Mm. When we work through a big topic, something mm-hmm. big is going on, it's generally a week. It'll be introduced. There'll be the reaction. There'll be the defense, you know, my counterattack, whatever you want to call it. Then there'll be the go to your corners. Mm-hmm. And then we come back to some sort of apology to one another, the love, the whatever. And then we look at solution. So that's the way it works for me. Now, for some people, they want faster results than that. But that's just what I've learned about myself in looking at my fight style or my, not even fight style, my communication style as the receiver. Mm-hmm. Now, as the giver, I like immediate response. Right? I need a week to process things, but you should have an answer by this
right
afternoon
now.
At 5
yep.
o'clock.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. So I have to take that into account too, that, you know, is what I'm asking him to do what I would need, what I would expect. Mm-hmm. You know, kind of the whole idea of putting yourself in somebody else's shoes, not for the empathetic, you know, because the word empathy is thrown around a lot today too. Mm-hmm. Everybody says they're an empath. When mm-hmm. I'm talking about having empathy for the person you're having a conversation with, it's just kind of putting yourself in that person's shoes and accepting the information that was just processed. Mm-hmm. How will they process it? How will they think it? If it's somebody you love and you care for, you should know. You should be able to tell, this is going to hurt. This is going to shake them. This is going to make them feel very uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And just acknowledge that as a response so that you're not upset by it. You know, we know. I'd know with my ex when I had to talk to him about something serious that he was going to get angry. Mm-hmm. And then what would happen? He'd get angry about it. And then I'd cope and settle. Because that was the only way to manage his anger mm. was to take his response, stick it in a box and put it on the shelf and just say, yep, that's the way he responds to everything. So I'd cope and settle and nothing ever changed until I left, you know?
Right.
There's that kind of stuff to consider. That's why I say it's important to know who you're talking to. right. and how they're going to respond.
And those pieces are sometimes that the way they respond and the way we all respond, because we all do this in good ways and bad ways.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes that is the thing that we try to work through too.
Yeah, that's that low level energy that's probably threaded through our entire relationship somewhere. Because if that's their stress response and that everything is stressful to them, how do you get beyond that? How do you, I'm a high level person. I generally hang out in that level 5 place, that curiosity, playfulness, inquisition.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're with somebody who's a level 2 and is always dragging you down and is always angry and frustrated or fighting with you, it's exhausting. Because you're constantly in a cycle of energy, just entrainment, where you're trying to pull him up or pull her up, you know, whatever, to your level, and they're constantly pulling you down. It's just, it's a no-win circle. So energetic matches are really important too. So the question is what to do afterward is, that's what this one's supposed to be about. So if I was joking with Judy before we started recording, the first thing I said was get a lawyer, depending on what the conversation was about. Of course, I would say allow some time. You got to allow some time, and you have to give an opportunity for the receiver to change. Change is not easy for people. If you're expecting a change and you want it overnight, it will be a fake change. That's not an organic change. People have to change from the inside out, and you have to give some time, and they have to want to change in order for it to stick.
Right.
If they're just doing it as a band-aid to please you, eventually it will wear off and you may have lost a year, 5 years, but the problem will come up again.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll be having this whole conversation again. And all the pain and all the frustration and all the what ifs and everything else will happen again. So you can agree at the end of a conversation to a time frame where you revisit the purpose of the conversation. So if you're like, we're just both really not happy, and at the end of the conversation you decide to try and work it out, you're going to go through counseling, whatever, have some expectation set up for accountability where you can say, okay, we're going to pursue, you know, some help, and in 6 months we need to revisit. Some time needs to go by.
Right.
To see if they're going to fall back into the behavior or do the same things over and over or totally disregard your need for change or your need for more communication or your need for more physical touch or whatever that is. If they can't keep it up for the 6 months where you know you're kind of in a probation period or a trial period, or you're going to come back and talk about it again, mm-hmm. then you have a leg to stand on. Then you have proof that it's not going to work to make you happy. Then you can have a place in your mind that says, well, I was willing to try. If you have the conversation and you decide at the end, I'm done, you don't want to pursue counseling, you don't want to go any further, you've already checked out, the boxes are all, you know, empty,
mm-hmm.
then you need to allow some time for a separation. You need to allow some time for healing. You need to allow some time to get your shit out of the house, or for them to get their stuff out of the house.
Mm-hmm. And for them to get used to this whole new
idea. Yeah. It just does not happen like a snap of the fingers. It doesn't. Big change doesn't happen like that.
Right.
And even little change, like I said, if it's not done organically from the inside out, that they want to do it, like they really desire to please you and love you the way you need to be loved, or to make the investment in your relationship because it's that important to them too. Or the whole idea of wanting to please each other so bad because you love each other and you put each other first. If those concepts aren't present after a heavy conversation, you're probably on your way out the door at some point, or you're mentally out the door already.
Yeah.
That's heavy, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah, it is. And I'm thinking of just again, you know, why some of these things are so hard in relationships for people to get back on track, who really want to be in the relationship, is sometimes it is about the communication. It is about not knowing. I mean, there's a lot of pieces that go into it, but I think it is sometimes not having the tools to be mindful or the experience of shifting of how you're thinking of coming back to that conversation.
Yeah.
And I think that that is another piece too. That's why I think it is a shame that we don't have more support for mental health and marriage counseling and relationship communication in our country. Like, yeah, we don't have more resources for that. I think there really are a lot of people that could come back or wouldn't have to get so stuck in a bad place. But, you know, just talking about this not too long ago about, you know, people who were wanting to get help, but they're like, there's no resources.
Yeah.
You know, and when they're financially struggling or whatever, or just not in, you know, room, and you can't just call your friends in for help. It doesn't really work that way.
No. No, so, because everybody's got their own baggage, and
right,
how one person handles things isn't necessarily how the next person should handle things. And
which is truth for a therapist as well, or a coach. But I think even then, you know, there's still some training out of that stuff, and you're getting a little bit more of a helpful.
Well, when you're dealing with a therapist, oftentimes they're going back through your history to finding the root. They're looking and they're revisiting things from the past to make sense of it. And when you're working with a coach, again, coaches are forward thinking, action based. So it's more about owning your own actions and putting a plan in place and moving forward. Mm-hmm. There's different language that's used in either session. So coaches are generally having you come up with your own deductions, having you come up with your own plan, having you focus on the topics that are at hand for you, mm-hmm, where a therapist dictates what's going to be taught, where we're going to go with this conversation, how much deeper we need to dive. You know, let's dwell in this for a while. Like, if it was daddy issues or something, that could, she, you know, he or she could hang in daddy issues with a client for months.
Right.
Until they get to the bottom of it. Like, mm-hmm, but with a coach would probably be like, well, you got daddy issues. Let's figure out how we, so you say you have daddy issues. Let's figure out how to use that productively in your life. How can that acceptance of that framework of thinking work for you positively going forward?
That's an interesting thing to think about and talk about too. If somebody is looking for help in that sense of, you can do therapy, like you say, is looking backwards. Coaching is looking forwards. Mm-hmm. So working with a coach sometimes might be able to suss out the stuff you really need to work out at therapy, mm-hmm, versus what we can take and move forward with today. And then here's the junk that's still left on the floor that maybe is good to look at.
With a therapist.
With a therapist.
Yeah. Like, if there's some deep, deep hurt, if there's like insecurities and things like that, are great things to go to a coach for, because a coach is all about building you up. Think about a coach on the sidelines of a little league football team, or the coach of a college basketball team, or the coach of the NFL team. You know, they're there to motivate, to make you be the best player you possibly can be, and all that kind of stuff. So shaking insecurities, acknowledging patterns and behavior, realizing what your triggers and buttons are, things like that. Those are all things that coaches are really, really good at identifying. Mm-hmm. Super good. And helping you own where you're at with your energy and how you're showing up in your relationships, how you're showing up sexually, how you're showing up in all of your life. This is the stuff that coaches really, really work well with. Being your greatest you. Mm-hmm. And out in life today, and the therapy is often about addressing wounds. Mm-hmm. A lot of people go to a therapist not even really knowing what their wounds are. Mm-hmm. And they really want to identify where this all came from. They're very deep thinkers. They want to really dive into their emotions, their why they feel so sad, why things are bothering them. Diving into that deep rooted emotional place, mm-hmm. why those emotions are there, what they're protecting, how they're attached to your ego or your id, you know, that's very much therapy talk. That's huge mm-hmm. psychology things. But
well, and I'm thinking in coaching, I think that as we're talking about this, I'm thinking there's probably a lot more room for people to go to coaches for their marriage issues than wait around for therapy.
I'll just put a plug in, of course, you know. working with a coach, here's the other thing. When you work with a coach, sometimes we're very tapped into our intuition. We're trained to pay attention to our intuition, which is something that I've been talking about. So we can hear words and we can see how people are relating to each other and we can look at your body language. I know for myself, I am really good at calling bullshit. I am really good at just calling it out just the way I see it. And then asking you, so how do you feel about when I say that?
You know? Right.
You know, and if that's a trigger, that's a trigger and we work through it. Mm-hmm. But to have a couple in front of me and you can see one is totally checked out and one is super engaged. Mm-hmm. When you can identify that that's what's happening in a couple, you mm-hmm. can be like, okay, listen, you paid me my money for the session today. Where are you on a scale of 1 to 10 as far as wanting to work this out? Where are you on a scale of 10 of where wanting to work this out? And they hear each other's answers, mm-hmm. right? And then I'll be like, but your body language says you're at a 0.
Right.
And your body language says you're at about a 6. So are you willing to meet her or him? What's happening here? You know, like you can see it. You can just call it out just right. for what it is and then put them on Front Street and have an accountability about it and just be like, you know, in order for this to work, it's going to take work and it's going to take work individually and it's going to take work together. And I have pads for accountability and communication in between. That's not usually what happens with a therapist.
Right.
Okay. A therapist gives you information in a session. They might send you home with some stuff, some tools or whatever, mm-hmm. but there's not usually more communication until the next visit if you can get them to both come again.
Mm-hmm. Got it.
When you're working with a coach is kind of there and available through emails or through additional phone calls or whatever else as needed along the way.
Right. So, can be so huge for people because it feels like it's a little different relationship.
Yeah. But it's a non-bias fly on the wall, mm-hmm. pretty much for what's going down and where things are going forward.
And I don't think we sort of think about coaches being that deep. I think that they are and they can be,
yeah.
but I think sometimes what we see or we hear, we don't think of the ability to dive down. Because in reality, in my mind, mm. you can go into a therapist and you can dig and dig and dig and that's fine.
Yeah.
And then in a coaching session, you can also call out some of that past stuff because you're having this realization of why you're doing something. And then it's how you're going to move forward too, right?
Absolutely. It's about accepting, okay, so maybe this happened. Like say, we'll go back to the cheating. So a woman comes to me and she's got some insecurities and feeling really jealous around her partner who has cheated on her before. So we dive into not about the story of the cheating or what he did or why he did it or any of the details. I don't care about any of that kind of stuff. I want to know, what is it about your experience with him cheating on you that's holding you back? Mm. And then have her kind of divulge what that is. And then ask further, well, how does that make you feel? And why do you think you feel that way? And then let her unravel some of that. And then be like, how is that serving you? Mm-hmm. Where does that play out in other areas in your life? Because what happens in one area of our life happens oftentimes in all other areas of our life, and we don't even realize it.
Right. Right.
So if you're a doormat at home, chances are you're a doormat somewhere else in your life too. And how unempowering is that, right? Mm-hmm. Or if you're insecure in this area, you're probably insecure at the office, or you're insecure at the soccer field or at the PTA, whatever. You probably have some other issues that are going on around insecurity. So it really is getting to the root. It's like pulling out roots in your garden. If you don't get down and pull out that full-on root and acknowledge what the hell it is, this is a dandelion and I'm throwing it over the fence, you know, that kind of a thing. I got the whole root, it's all gone. Mm-hmm. And getting rid of it. So we identify it, we accept it for what it is, and then we say adios, let it go, and move forward
in a different way. And
yep.
Yeah,
create
and you're
space
working
and
with
plant
them.
The seeds, right?
Right. How is this going to look, and how are we going to do this and get through it so life looks mm-hmm. differently in the future?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's powerful stuff, and it can transform a relationship. It can transform an individual. It can cause people to go separate ways. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes, when people come to a coach, one of the two has some sort of realization that the relationship just isn't serving them anymore. And then they make a choice to either plug back in or to move on, because that's the action. And a lot of people need help accepting that that's where they're at and having permission to do that. Not saying that that's how it all, you know, how all of the sessions happen, but just being honest, because it all comes down to the two individuals that sit in front of me, or the one individual I'm talking to, because I talk about authenticity, each individual person's authenticity. What do they really want? Mm-hmm. What are their core values? What is it that fuels them? What gives them passion? What thrills them? Where can they be playful and curious and have fun? Right. Where do they get those higher purpose vibes from the world? Like where they really feel like that's driving their life force. Mm-hmm. And that gives a sense of belonging, a sense of connection, which is what everybody wants. Everybody wants to be connected. Right. It's like a root of all of my research that I'm doing right now. Anything that I come up with, the root word is connection. People are craving connection, touch, words, action, involvement. It's all about connection.
And meaning and meaning. Worth and all of those things come from that. Cause I think you're right. It's so hard to understand sometimes, because I mean, I get it. I totally get it. But it is that we live in such a connected world where we're too connected and not connected enough at the same time.
Yep.
You know,
those damn phones again.
Well, yeah, it is. I think of how many places do I have to go look? You know, I could be having a conversation on text, on Facebook Messenger, on three different emails. Mm. And you're trying to manage all of them. And then the phone rings and you're like, what do I do with this? You know? Yep. So it's like, but it's all of it. And it's usually, you know, then when you get that overloaded, then it's kind of quick and you're there and you're getting the job done, but you're not really present with that person. And you value, I value those times where I can be just so present. And not have to worry about the phone or, mm-hmm. you know, because sometimes you kind of do. You have to balance this situation and then that person. But mm-hmm. to be able to just immerse yourself in how do you want to connect with people. And that looks really differently for different people too, I think.
Sure.
But I think sometimes people don't realize. Again, I sit in my group, my men's group, and I see these guys who they basically say, I love coming here, but I don't ever want to come here again. And I think the love coming here is that there is that connection, that there is that yeah. place to talk and be themselves at the whatever, you know, non-filtered way that they want to be mm-hmm. and have real conversations. And I think people crave that. And then I think there are some people who really don't need that, and others who just have never had that experience of really being in the space with somebody where you're just there, you're just present, and, you know, you're hearing each other.
Yeah, and two, I mean, like, when we're saying connection, we're talking, I think you and I are both speaking more about, like, personal connection, but mm-hmm. some people get connection from nature, and some people
Very
get
true.
Connection from physical exercise, you yep. know, being connected with their body, or yep. some people are very mind-driven, and they get connection through reading books or the energy that's, you know, transpired through a story. So not to say, I mean, and the connect, so connection can even be such a diverse word for everybody's individual personalities and stuff. So
yeah,
I just want to acknowledge that. I don't want people to think that if you spend a lot of time alone, like if you prefer to be by yourself or have downtime in your relationship, that there's something wrong.
Right.
My,
yes.
Like my husband and I, we're like two rooms apart. He's sitting in his lounger in the family room and I'm in my office and I enjoy that space. You know, I don't need to be when I'm not on the not on calls with you. I'm in here and I'm creating, I'm doing my own thing, or I'm out in the garage and I'm painting, or, you know, we don't have to be in each other's space all the time mm-hmm. to be connected.
Right.
But, so I don't know where I was going with that. With, for me, I feel connected when I'm in my creativity mm-hmm. and I'm connected when we're having intimate touch or we're deep in a conversation. So we're very connected because we're just connecting in a lot of different levels.
Right.
But it's not necessary to do that. I mean, for each person, it could be different. I have a client who she sees her boyfriend once a month and that's enough connection for her.
Oh, wow.
She's, mm-hmm. she's very happy with once a month and doesn't need to, she's very independent and likes to be alone. And so again, I guess it just is a, it's a spectrum also as far as how much everybody needs
yes.
according to their desires and their wants and stuff.
Right. And knowing yourself, knowing what that means and about yourself is.
Well, that's the biggest part is just understanding your values, understanding yourself, and then coming to terms with who you are in a relationship with somebody. Mm-hmm. Three key, big things. Big, know your values, know yourself, and know who you are with a partner. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
Those three things are so important. So, and authenticity comes into play with all of those things.
Right.
So.
And those are things we learn throughout our lives, mm-hmm. you know, and we shift and we change, but it's yep. being able to, yeah, keep your eyes open for understanding yourself is huge. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep.
Absolutely.
So that was an accidental conversation and why coaches are valuable.
Well, I appreciate that. No, that it is really important.
Well, it is. I think I see the value and the need that people, that we can get from being able to have a third party help mm-hmm. us figure our stuff out with each other, help us communicate with each other, help us translate.
Yeah.
I find a lot of value in that, mm-hmm. You know, and having been in relationships where I have, you know, where we have had a third party in the middle, some amazing and wonderful things have come out of that. So
yeah,
I think it's a great thing.
Oh, that's good. I like it. I think it helps a lot.
Yeah.
It's helped me. It's helped a lot of people that I am friends with. It's helped a lot of my clients. So right. I just, I'm glad to be able to give back that way.
Well, we think about teachers mm-hmm. and we think about, you know I was listening to something that Tony Robbins was talking about. I hadn't realized until I listened to this that he was like he was really where coaches came from. Mm. And, you know, but we know we have football coaches, but it used to come from you had an apprentice, mm-hmm. right? And so yeah. And that's kind of where he sees the coach thing. It's
yep.
it's that apprentice. And I thought that was just a really interesting, and it helped me gain respect for the coach concept. Mm. It's not just a fluffy, you know, somebody to help you write down your SMART goals.
No, oh,
it's,
no.
It's so much deeper than that. And I've seen the results of that. I mean, for sure.
Yeah.
But it is.
I'm like called the queen of questions. So like, I belong to some of groups and stuff like that. And I just ask really deep, thought-provoking questions that people just don't normally think about. And it really helps them to unearth things about themselves that they just don't even know, which is just really fascinating for me to watch them unravel mm-hmm. And see what kind of path it ends up taking us down. Because in a coach-client relationship, it's always supposed to be the coach that, I mean, the client that's leading. The client always goes where the client wants to go with mm-hmm. the topic. It's never about my agenda. So I could be talking to somebody as a sexual authenticity coach, and I'll be like, so what topic do you want to talk about today? And they may say, my daughter got into a bullying situation at school. And I'll be like, okay, well, let's talk about that then. You know, mm-hmm. like that's, if that's where their mind is, that's where they're at. And we just go with it. So I am a life coach first and foremost, because I can coach around any aspect of life. But as far as the niche goes and stuff, it's still client led. Every session starts out with what the client wants to talk about. They get what they need or what they want out of each session.
Mm. Yeah. Well, that's a good awareness as you walk into a coach's office.
Yeah. It should be, right?
What do you want? What do you want out of it? Or making sure that you, if you really want to address something, make sure that you know that. But also the freedom mm-hmm. to say this
to
just
be flexible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I gotta, you know, let's talk about this kind of thing. So yeah. And questions, you know what? I love being in a space where the person asking the question, like, you feel safe to answer. Mm. Like, I have a friend who is amazing at asking questions. It's so much fun because she's one of those people you feel totally safe answering around. Right. Mm-hmm. And it's just, you know, it's one of those things where you gain so much from the conversation, both of you.
Yeah.
You learn about you, she learns about you. And I've always want to channel my inner her because I love the questions. And it's a certain amount of boldness and self-security and knowing the other person to be able to ask those questions as well, you know. Mm-hmm. And I want to practice that more because I love it. And I think there's just so much to be gained, and you know, and not everybody's receptive. I know she's freaked a few people out by asking some of the questions that she's asked.
Yeah.
Not that they were offended. They were just like, oh, wow. Okay. What do I do with that? You know, but it is that unexpected or that thought provoking walking through and being able to walk through the steps.
Mm-hmm.
And I love it when I can be, but I had a friend who he said to me one time, he goes, you know, I love the way you answer questions because you never just say yes or no. You always have qualifiers. And yep. I was like, I don't know if that was a sideways, like slight, geez whiz, just say yes or no. I don't really think so. I think he was like, you always have an additional thought to what you're saying. And I'm like,
that's the interviewer in you.
But it's an interesting thing that I answer that way. But I think that is very true to who I am. If you ever play, oh gosh, what's that? Scruples.
Yes.
You can pretty much always argue that I'm going to put up a depends card.
Of course. I can see that because we have a lot of conversations where you play the devil's advocate all the time.
There's just never a yes or no. I just, right. I have always wondered, is that like a deficiency?
You Libra.
See, there
That's
you go.
That's,
yeah, it's so hilarious. I don't know. But it's fascinating. I know it annoys some people, and I'm sorry, people.
Wow. It sounds like an airplane's going to land in my front yard. Oh, I don't wow. know what's going on outside, but.
You occasionally have that happen there, don't you?
No.
Oh, I thought one other time we were on and you were like,
there was a truck or something. Yeah, there was some, maybe it was an airplane. Is it time for dinner? Oh, wait a second. You give me a taste though? Aw, my hubby's bringing me a taste of dinner.
Oh, it's good.
It's good. That to be said, I guess it's soon time to wrap up.
Oh, yes. So. Well, I was going to say, so we have far adrift from what do we do afterwards in a good way, I think, because I think it still applies.
Yeah.
But what else are we missing in that? What do we do afterwards? Because if you've come to the conclusion that you're in the space and you want to be in the space, then it's about working towards that. But that might look like working with a coach. It might, mm-hmm. it looks like having these continued communications.
Well, there's actually just kind of a broad answer, which is to create space.
Mm-hmm.
Time and space is what's necessary after a conversation like that.
Okay.
So okay. If the space means a space with a counselor or a space with a coach or space afterward to allow things to settle, it doesn't mean that you have to move away from each other or take opposite ends of the house or something like that. I just mean giving each other some time, some space to work through what was just digested, allow some time to see change or to not see change, whatever, however you're mentally going to intend for the outcome. Mm-hmm. And then again, just remembering to have that timepiece, that way to measure clearly between you and your partner that something is either being done or not done, so that there's some sort of accountability. Because that would then be the basis for the next conversation.
Right.
Which, you know, could be the next conversation is, I see you're trying. Thank you so much for, you know, it's so important to me that you heard what I said. All these kind of the validations, especially from women to men, when you want your man to do something, you need to give positive reinforcement whenever you see them trying, because their ego needs it in order for them to continue seeing it as a value to them. Men and women are wired differently. Women need to feel appreciated and loved in other ways. And that can be, and it's different for most women are just a little more complex than men when it comes to this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And each woman almost needs to know her own, like the love language thing. For me, love language is gifts, not superficial gifts. It could be anything can really be a gift if you think about it. If my husband sets aside time to work on my paint studio in the garage, to me, his time is a gift. Although, mm-hmm. you know, they actually separate time as one of the gifts, one of the five love languages. So dedicated time, like time to go on a walk together or time away someplace together, you know, where it's just focused one-on-one thing. But knowing your love language and then not necessarily speaking in your love language. So for me, my husband is words of affirmation. Mm-hmm. So if I bring him a gift, he doesn't care about the gift. So I bought him a shirt for his birthday, right? And he didn't want the shirt. I'm like, well, you're going to be seen with me, so you're going to wear the shirt. You know, like, I want you to look nice. We have a wedding to go to. You know, let's, I made it a birthday present. So there you go. Put it on. And then I just told him how amazing he looked in it and how wonderful. And now it's become his favorite shirt.
So you see,
there's ways that works when you're speaking the right language, when you're speaking to your partner's language. So I really do. I love the five love languages. I also have been reading his follow-up book, which is the five apology languages.
Ooh.
There's different ways that we apologize.
That is intriguing.
Yes. Very interesting.
Wow. I'll have to check that out, because that's an important and a challenging thing, and something that I think people really get hung up on.
Yeah, because some people need to see the change right away. Some people need you to verbally acknowledge that you were wrong. Some people need to for you to accept all the responsibility. Mm-hmm. For some people, I mean, it's really interesting, really, really interesting. And it's super cool that it's been broken down so simply, that if you can figure out what your love language is, what your apology style is, and then know what your partner's love language is and what their apology style is, it gives you tools to use to help communicate and to help resolve issues and to help show appreciation and love for each other.
And know the other person isn't being a jerk.
Yeah. Yeah. So like my husband gives me words of affirmation all the time. Oh, you're so beautiful. Oh, thank you for doing that. And I'm like, yeah. I'm like, you say it all the time. You know, like to me, the words, I'm like an action girl. Like I show me how much you appreciate me with a gift. That would be nice. Pick me some flowers or something. I don't know. Bring me a dandelion. That's a gift to me. And I'm just like, oh, you know, right. that'll melt me in a moment.
Thoughtfulness. I don't know how you are about this, but it's not the size of the gift. It's the thoughtfulness. It's the meaning it has between you two.
Yeah. I mean, he'll go to the store and he'll bring me home an RX bar. How sexy and romantic is that? Right. But I love those freaking things and they're healthy and they taste like chocolate. So I'm like, yeah, okay, this is awesome.
Right. Exactly.
And every time he goes to the store, he either brings me back an RX bar or he brings me back gummy bears. I mean, like whatever. And both of them I love equally. So they get stashed away. And then whenever I'm hungry for chocolate or candy, I have my go-tos and I'm very thankful.
Right.
So it's, But
Joel said to me one time, he said, you know, if you want like flowers and jewelry or something, you got to say something because I don't perceive that
that's something to his mind.
And what's that?
That doesn't come to his mind.
Well, but he perceives it as something that I'm not wanting, like that's not, and he's right.
Okay.
That isn't something that drives my interest, you know?
Okay.
He bought me a piece of jewelry once because it was a piece of jewelry I really, really, really loved. And I really, really loved it until I lost it. But it was, and that was meaningful. And the piece of jewelry is meaningful, but jewelry in general, not meaningful.
Yeah.
So I have one question that I know from a friend who listens to this podcast that she will say when it comes to providing affirmations, because I agree. And I think, and maybe it's a whole other podcast, but figuring out how to do that, the words that we say, but then here's the thing, and this comes up as a theme well beyond her, and I get this myself, I don't mean to pick on guys, but this is just the most experience that I've had with and seen. So they're trying to make a change, you're trying to provide good encouragement for this change that you really, really want to happen. And they do it, and you acknowledge it. But then sometimes that feels like that acknowledgement is then, okay, done my job. And it's not done again, but I did it last Tuesday, or I did it once and I should get a cookie for that because I did it. So how do we give cookies and helping it know that we, and encourage to keep going on this track or to not get annoyed or find a productive way to say, it was great that you did that once. I need that to keep happening.
That's nagging. Don't do that.
Right. So how do you do it productively?
So you detach from the outcome, which we talked about earlier. Detach from the outcome. So when he does it, we're saying he, just because that was your example.
Right.
When he does what he's supposed to do, say like emptying the dishwasher. Okay. Simple. Or taking out the trash. I like to be playful and funny about it. Like my way of saying words of affirmation is along the lines of, you are the sexiest garbage man I have ever seen. And I love when you bend over and your butt crack shows like that. So I make it playful and sexy just because that's my style and that's, you know, that's what I'm about. And he always takes out the trash. I mean, like, or emptying the dishwasher, I'll have run it the night before, so I know that it needs to be emptied, and I'll go to do it and it'll be done already. And I'll be like, I just appreciate you paying attention to detail so much. Thank you for noticing that that needed to be done and just doing it. So that plants a seed that anytime he sees something that needs to be done, he just does it. Do you understand what I'm saying? And I'm not doing it to be manipulative. Right. I'm just choosing my words in a way that it's building him up and allowing the thought for other ways for him to knock my socks off. Because that's what they want to do. Men really are pleasers. They want to care for their woman. Woman, whatever. Like, you know, like, woman, get over here. No, that's not what I'm talking about. But they really, not all, I know that's a generalization, but the deep desire in a man is to provide for the woman, his mate. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of they're wired for to hunt and conquer. So if you can think about those two aspects together, the hunt and conquer and the being wired to provide. Okay, so they're generally the same thing, mm-hmm. if you really think about it. So when they're providing a service for you, let them know you appreciate their service. You appreciate them providing for you in that way. Now, women, on the other hand, we would just want to be generally appreciated and loved. We need the emotional piece. Mm-hmm. And that's hard for men because they're not wired that way. They have to learn. They have to really try. It's something that's not natural to them. Mm-hmm. As women, we're intellectual. We have a lot more intellectual and we want an emotional connection with our man. So we will do what's necessary to make that connection happen. Men don't think the same way women do. It is so true that men are from Mars and women are from Venus. There, it's absolutely truth. Although I did read, and this is another podcast, that women's voices have dropped 23 hertz in frequency over the last 50 years because of gender equalization.
Oh, wow.
And then, so we talk about becoming high vibe or raising our frequency. Mm-hmm. A lot of that frequency stuff is attractive to a man. A woman's voice and the frequency that we emit at was much higher frequency 50 years ago.
That's interesting.
Than it is now. Hmm. Which I find very, over time, things
totally
change.
Totally fascinating. But then, of course, then I'm curious about of where that plays out. Because are you saying that the higher voices then are more attractive?
No, not higher voices in general. I'm saying that it's a frequency thing.
Okay.
So a general frequency, yeah.
Okay.
And it might like play into, they were actually saying that it had to do with gender equalization.
Interesting.
That this change has happened, which I found pretty fascinating.
Yeah. But,
well.
I think that's a fine place to end.
Okay. Yeah. Well, my husband's putting the plates on the table, I know I have to go eat dinner.
All right. Oh,
I have to go appreciate his service right now, the fact that he cooked me dinner and tell him how sexy he was doing it while I'm behind a closed door on.
Exactly. Just the idea is pretty sexy. So yeah. you can pass that on for me if you like.
Okay, I will. I hope that was a really helpful series for somebody, anybody, and please feel free to leave your comments or communicate however you would like to. Don't forget to send in those questions or situations or whatever, and give us some interesting fodder to talk over.
Right. So, or something, you're hearing something and you're like, what do I say if? What do I do when? You know?
Yeah, very good.
Because some of those things can be fun. It's fun to have a specific situation to talk about.
Well, thanks, Judy.
Yeah, thank you.
Till next time.
And thank you for hanging out and listening. It's interesting that Patricia mentioned the deepening of women's voices. I actually went and watched a video on that, but I also was listening to a voice coach who coaches people like Tony Robbins and a ton of other people talking about how we should be talking in our lower registers and breathing differently, and the sound typically comes out a little bit lower, but that we then sound more sincere. So it's all very interesting. On that note, thank you for listening. It's been a long time since I've taken voice lessons, sadly, and those are things we played with a lot in voice class. Anyway, if you want to find out about Patricia and working with her individually and more about the work that she does, you can definitely check her out at patriciaengelking.com. Please check out my weekly wellness podcast at wellnessrenaissancepodcast.com. And if you are somebody that likes exploring the concepts around our hierarchical culture and masculinity, what it means to be a man, and how we navigate this world as men and women, I had a really fantastic conversation with a gentleman here in Duluth, Minnesota. It is episode 118, and it is called A Man Working to End Violence and Navigating Our Hierarchical Culture. We also talk about some of the programs here in Duluth, Minnesota, and what is being done to work on ending violence. Chris, the person that I spoke with, speaks really candidly, and it's just a fantastic and very insightful and thoughtful conversation. So if the topic interests you, definitely check it out. You can, of course, find more information about the podcast, Patricia's book, sign up for our email list so you don't miss an episode, and of course, ask your questions at sexmatterspodcast.com. We will see you next week. Have a good one.